This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
We will call the Public Utilities Commission meeting to order. It is March 1st, 9:30 a.m., room 413 of the Capitol Building. This is Commissioner Nelson. I will be chairing today. Commissioners Hansen and Feagin are present with us on the telephone. And we will begin today with Consumer Reports. Deb Gregg.
Thank you, Commissioner Nelson. The Commission received a total of 46 contacts since the last report was prepared for the February 15th, 2019 Commission meeting. Six of the contacts involved telecommunication services, 11 contacts related to electrical service, 3 contacts related to natural gas service, 1 contact was related to gas and electric service, 3 contacts related to wireless service, 8 contacts related to the Do Not Call Registry, 1 contact was related to wind energy, 5 contacts related to the grain warehouse division, and 8 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. And 267 of the 278 contacts received in 2019 have been resolved.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions from commissioners? Hearing none. Thank you, Deb.
Thanks.
And I think for the benefit of everybody, we will take the agenda in order today, which means we're going to start with our first electric docket, EL18-021, in the matter of the application of Otter Tail Power Company for authority to increase its electric rates. And the questions today are, shall the commission grant the joint motion for approval of settlement stipulation and approve the terms and conditions stipulated therein? And we'll start with Otter Tail and then go to staff.
Good morning. I'm Kerry Stephenson, Associate General Counsel for Otter Tail Power, and I have with me Mr. Peter Bython, who is our Manager of Regulatory Recovery. And we have a couple of other individuals with us today, Matt Olson, who is our Manager of Regulatory Proceedings, and Tyler Ackerman is our Manager of Business Planning.
Mr. Chairman, I'm having difficulty hearing.
Okay, they're coming across good here, so let me see if I can increase the outgoing phone volume. Just hang on a second. Okay, try it again and see if that works.
Good morning.
How's that sound, Gary?
Excellent.
Okay, great.
Very good. Thank you.
And we're here, obviously, in support of a joint motion asking the commission to approve a settlement agreement that has been prepared by staff and Otter Tail. And we do appreciate staff's efforts in arriving at the settlement agreement. And we think the settlement reflects a reasonable resolution of the issues. It's the product of a lot of analysis and a lot of give and take. We have responded to quite a few data requests. Staff has, I think, done all the appropriate reviews of the information we've provided. And it does leave one issue unresolved that's been noticed for hearing at the end of this month, and that is return on equity. But overall, the settlement puts us in a position to move ahead. It addresses some major projects that we have coming up, Astoria and Maricourt, which we will plan on having in service by the end of 2020. And it helps us stay out of a rate case for a number of years as well. And overall, we think it's, again, a reasonable outcome, and we're here to address questions as best we can.
Thank you, and I think we'll hold questions. We'll go to staff and then come around to questions.
Thank you. This is Kristen Edwards for staff, and we have filed a settlement stipulation and joint motion for approval thereof. I would agree with Mr. Stephenson that this is a reflection of a lot of give and take, and for that reason, all items in this settlement reflect negotiation and a compromise tied to this settlement only, and in staff's opinion, should have no bearing on any decision outside of this settlement, specifically any decision regarding rate of return on equity. We would stand available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. We will go to questions of commissioners, and I'll go to Chairman Hansen first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. I will have comments at the end, but however, I do not have any questions at this time. I think it was, I just appreciate all of the explanation. A lot of information, a lot of work went into this, but I'll have comments later on. Thank you.
Then we'll go to Commissioner Feagin.
Thank you. First of all, just for the public's interest, you have all worked on this over 10 months, and although this is a very brief discussion today, the detail that all of you have done has been phenomenal. My first question is for staff, and the tax cuts that we put in this rate case is a little bit different and unique. And just for the public and making sure that you express it, because your report is very long or your memo is very long, could you give us just an explanation so the public understands how the tax cuts were brought into this and how you worked on the depreciation, the PTC, all of that for the benefit of our taxpayer or our ratepayers?
Yeah, this is Brittany Malhoff for staff. The settlement does reflect an adjustment, all necessary adjustments to reflect the impact of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, changing the corporate tax rate from 35% to 21%. You mentioned it is a little different than the other companies just because we did have a rate case going at the time. We could incorporate the adjustment into this case. There is no 2018 refund for this company. The adjustment is reflective as of the date of interim rates went into effect, which was in October of 2018, and no adjustment was necessary or refund was necessary prior to that time because you mentioned the PTCs. Looking back at how the company's rates were set in the last rate case in 2010, the PTCs were significant and created a negative income tax. And so changing the tax rate from 35% to 21% would have actually increased the revenue requirement. And furthermore, we have completed a cost of service analysis based on the 2017 test year, and the settlement demonstrates the company is in a deficiency even after the impacts of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act are incorporated. So it would not be appropriate to have a refund for 2018. Does that answer all your questions?
Yes, thank you. And I just wanted to make sure that was on the record. And there's another question that I have for staff, and I just want to make sure the public understands that. Can you kind of talk about the adjustment of the load that you have put in this settlement, that you are guaranteed the ability to look at the adjustment of load for Lake Norton in the basin? So you review that for the benefit of the ratepayers. And can you just kind of explain that so that's on the record? Because that's a huge adjustment on load. So, of course, there's benefits, and then, of course, there's a bigger cost allocation.
Yeah, this is Brittany Malhoff again. As part of the agreement for the phase-in rider, there will be an adjustment to reflect the net benefit of the additional load in the Lake Norton area. At this point, I don't know exactly what that will amount to be. It depends on the outcome of this case, what the additional revenues will be, and it depends on what their demand and energy actually ends up being. But a large customer with that good of a load factor should be a benefit to the system. And so that's why we pursued an adjustment to reflect that within the phase-in rider.
Thank you. And thank you for allowing the staff to continue to look at that to get the benefit in the future. For the company, there's a couple things, and it's some new things that you're doing, and so this gives me an opportunity to ask you a little bit about it. Your CIS project, and someday I'd love to come up to your facility and look at that and see a demonstration of the effectiveness it's going to have for our customers in your area. But it's going to increase your ability for cybersecurity. But can you tell us, you did move the implementation back into February, and the expenses, it looks like there were some not known and measurable expenses of that $15 million, then $19 million, then the settlement of $17 million, somewhere around there. Can you kind of explain some of that?
Commissioner Fagan, this is Kerry Stephenson. The project, as you know, went live February 1st, and as far as the recovery in the rate case, a portion that it run through the end of December is what we used for actuals, and there is continuing work that's scheduled for the project. And like any project, there's a post-go-live period and some follow-up items, so there will be a rounding out of the expenses to, I think we had the budgeted amount of $19 million approximately. And the settlement provides that that's something that we could seek in our next rate case.
Okay, thank you. And then the very last question, and of course, this is something in the future that you're doing about it, but it's very unique, and I really love that you're doing this pilot on residential time of day. Can you kind of explain that to the public of what you're doing so they know? Because sometimes it's hard for the public to go through all the information of a rate case and actually see the detail of that.
Chair Fagan, this is Kerry Stephenson. The residential time of day pilot is an effort to implement a rate that gives price signals, of course, based on the time of day. And some customers may find that advantageous, and it allows us to test how effective those price signals are. Ultimately, if you can have cost-effective price signals, it does save on our system, and for all customers, we may not need to add additional resources if we can take and shave peaks using these kind of price signals.
Thank you. Chairman Nelson, that is my last question.
Thank you. And that last question spurred a thought in my mind. I mean, have you laid out the parameters of what that test is going to look like yet?
Commissioner Nelson, this is Pete Bython with Otter Tail. Yes, we have laid out. I mean, we've laid out the parameters. We're going to limit it to 50 customers initially. And you know, we want to find out and collect data before we do a final design and propose a final time of day rate for customers, which we would anticipate doing in our next case.
Sure. And so would that be kind of the 50 first come, first serve, or do they have to be in a particular community, or how does that look?
I think and I'm maybe not in the best position to explain that, but there'll have to be certain parameters around who people will have to do it. Location won't matter so much. They don't have to be in the same community. We have to install some special metering for them so they can get. We can see what their usage is, and that's why we're doing a pilot, is to see how responsive customers are, and if the initial design works, and we can start tweaking it if it doesn't work the way we might think it's going to work. Because not all customers are going to respond in the same manner.
Excellent. Well, I just want to say from my perspective, I commend you on doing that. First of all, having the wisdom to do a pilot instead of trying to do a full-blown something. We've seen some of that in other scenarios that haven't worked out well. And so I think that's wise on your part, and certainly moving in what probably is going to be the direction of the future. So thank you. I think the only other question I've got, maybe for staff, the April 1st, 2022 moratorium date, how was that specific date chosen?
This is Brittany Malhoff for staff. We chose the moratorium date based on, first of all, the anticipated in-service date of the two projects that will be included in the phase-in. And then we wanted to have a year's worth of operation for both of those, both Mericourt and Astoria, so that when we set rates in the next rate case, we have that information to base rates off of.
So it was really kind of just a practical consideration of being able to get all the data you thought you would need at that point, correct?
Correct. It eliminates using estimates, which is very helpful.
Yes, I'm sure it is. That's all the questions I've got. Other commissioners, any other questions? If not, is there a motion? In EL 18-021, I move that the Commission grant the joint motion for approval of settlement stipulation and approve the terms and conditions stipulated therein. Discussion on the motion. I will begin by first of all saying to the company and to staff, it was obviously apparent to us the lengths and depths that you both went to try to find agreement on a whole lot of different issues. Staff, as usual, your memo was exceptionally well done, and I think is reflected in the lack of questions this morning because it really answered a lot of the questions up front. So we appreciate that, appreciate getting this far. I thought maybe you were going to come with a big announcement this morning that the last issue had been ultimately resolved in the dark of night, but apparently that's not the case. And so we will meet again sometime later this month and deal with that particularly interesting issue. But commend both of you for getting to this point. And, you know, when you reflect on how long it's been since the last rate increase and whatever final number we settle on, it's going to end up being a pretty reasonable number given how long it's been since the last increase. So with that, thank you. Other discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I would just say I tremendously appreciate the work that Mr. Stephenson and Ms. Melhoff and everyone else that worked on this. This is a very, very complex rate case that they went through, and as you pointed out, and appreciate the questions that Commissioner Feagin had, which brings to light the complexity of this rate case. A tremendous amount of work went into this. Obviously, the general public has no idea when they hear of a rate case and just simply see a percentage and the effect that it might have on them, and certainly that's of paramount importance to them. However, the different tentacles of this rate case that were brought out by Commissioner Feagin I appreciate her doing that. It's something that I hadn't contemplated, but it brings to light the complexity of this and just how tremendously difficult these rate cases can be. So I very much appreciate the work that staff went through and to a great extent saved us all the challenge of having a hearing on it. So thank you very, very much.
Commissioner Feagin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, thank you, staff and Otter Tail, for really bringing stability in rates because of your rate moratorium on the base rate until 2022. And it's going to be very interesting in 2022 what rate design you do, because I believe the rate model or the rate making will be different because of generation behind the meter. And so it will be interesting to see how we allocate costs on reliability to our system in our next rate case. And who knows? It'll be 10 years maybe instead of 2022, but that'll be interesting. Otter Tail, I certainly appreciate your filings. Your filings are always effective and efficient. And although you may be a small utility in the grand scheme of things, your utility just does a great job working with staff, and you guys do a great job with your filings. And what we also see is your flexibility. You're able to be very, very nimble. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that you're nimble when it comes to pilots. You're nimble working with staff, and you're very nimble and flexible, making sure our customers have reliable service every day at a reasonable rate. And I certainly appreciate your efficiency in your filing. So thank you. Thank you certainly for your rate moratorium, and it'll be interesting next time what happens. And someday, I want to get up there and see a demo of your new CIS system.
Additional discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Chairman Hansen.
Aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carried. Thank you. That will take us to EL 18-051 in the matter of the joint request for an electric service boundary change between Clay Union and the City of Vermilion. I'll go to Mr. Larson.
Thank you, Chairman Nelson. I know Shane is on the line from the City of Vermilion, too, but this is really a mutual agreed-upon reassignment of territory. The two lots in question were Clay Union Service territory. In fact, on Lot 5, we had been serving three services on that. When we done the mapping project in 2014, neither Shane or myself were involved in that, but for whatever reason, those two lots got left out and became service territory of the City of Vermilion. This come to light when on Lot 6 here recently, a gentleman had inquired about putting service there. We looked at the maps and we saw that the city had contacted Clay Union and said, hey, this shows a city service territory now. We know you got services right there. Can we come to an agreement? And with the memorandum of understanding that you should have there, that is the agreement that we came up with. And I'm just here to answer any questions that commissioners may have on it.
Very good. Thank you. City of Vermilion.
Really don't have anything else to add to it. Chris laid it out pretty perfectly.
Thank you. Staff.
Hello, this is Lorena Reichert of staff. Staff appreciates the companies working together to have an agreement on this and would recommend approving the boundary change.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Hearing none, is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, in EL 18-051, I move that the commission approve the service territory boundary change.
Discussion on the motion.
Just simply say that I appreciate the companies fixing this and coming up with answers, making it easy on all of us.
And I would certainly echo that, and this is maybe the first example of where, through no fault of really anybody's, the maps that we worked so hard on, we found an imperfection. But I say thank you to both of these utilities for working cooperatively to bring that to our attention and to fix it expeditiously and without any acrimony. And so the process is working. Additional discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Chairman Hansen.
Aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. That brings us to EL 18-053 in the matter of the application of Dual Harvest Wind Energy LLC for a permit of a wind energy facility and a 345 kV transmission line in Dual County. The question today is, shall the commission grant withdrawal of party status to those who have filed to withdraw their party status? And if my records are correct, we are considering George Holborn, Ruby Holborn, and Nancy Henslin. We'll go to, I don't see any of them on the line, nor do they need to be, Dual Harvest.
Thank you, Lisa Agramonte. On behalf of Dual Harvest, we have no objection to the withdrawal of party status.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you. This is Amanda Reese for staff. We have no objection to the withdrawal either. Thank you.
Very good. Questions from the commission? Motions.
Mr. Chairman, in EL18-053, I move that the commission grant the withdrawal of party status to those who have filed for the withdrawal of their party status.
Discussion on the motion.
I certainly appreciate that when there's some duplication or some uncertainty of being in the party status. Evidentiary hearings are very complex, and I certainly appreciate people being involved. But if they don't want to be involved or if there's some duplication on family members, that they take care of that in advance. So I appreciate that.
Additional discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Chairman Hansen.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. I'm going to check the phone line. Jason Kyle, have you joined us?
I'm here, Commissioner Nelson.
Excellent. Then we will go to EL18-060. In the matter of the filing of Black Hills Power, doing business as Black Hills Energy, for approval of a renewable ready service tariff and tariff revisions to its energy cost adjustment. And the question is, shall the commission grant leave of any parties that may have filed? And in particular, we're talking about Walmart. And with that, I will go to Mr. Wazorek.
Thank you, Commissioner. Talbot Wazorek for Walmart, Inc. We did file after the intervention deadline as set forth in the initial filing of the proceeding. However, pursuant to the rule, the commission can still grant intervention at this time, and it would be appropriate to grant intervention because there's no undue prejudice resulting by this filing. We did not miss it by that great of a time, and we have got our filing for intervention in before any substantive activity has taken place in the matter. So I'd ask that the commission grant intervention.
Thank you. Black Hills.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Nelson. This is Todd Brink on behalf of Black Hills, and the company has no objection to the intervention.
And staff.
No objection from staff.
Excellent. Questions from the commission? Is there a motion? I will move in EL18-060 that the commission grant intervention to Walmart. Discussion on the motion. I'll simply say normally I'd look kind of dimly at late filed interventions, but in this case, Mr. Wazorek is exactly right. No harm, no foul. And for, it appears that they may be helpful as we work through this kind of a unique filing on the behalf of Black Hills. Additional discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carried. Brings us to EL19-005 in the matter of the filing of Otter Tail Power Company for approval of tariff revisions to its rates for small power production and cogeneration. And we will go to Otter Tail.
Svetlana Fedri is here, and we had a very good discussion with the staff, and we're here to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you. This is Eric Paulson for staff. Staff has reviewed the filing. The company has responded to all of staff's data requests, and staff would recommend the commission approve Otter Tail's tariff revisions with an effective date of April 1st, 2019.
Questions from the commission? Hearing none, is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
In EL 19-005, I move that the Commission approve the proposed revisions to Otter Tail Power Company's rates for small power production and cogeneration for qualifying facilities with an effective date of April 1st, 2019.
Discussion.
Oh, again, this is another challenging docket that staff and Otter Tail did a great job on. We appreciate the work that they did. And I guess that's all I have to say on it, except that maybe we need to pay our staff a little bit more.
Additional discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Chairman Hansen.
Aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carried. Brings us to EL 19-008, in the matter of the filing by Mid-American Energy Company for approval of tariff revisions to its 2018 Transmission Cost Recovery Reconciliation and 2019 Transmission Cost Recovery Factors. The question today, shall the Commission assess a filing fee in the amount of up to $50,000 to account for actual expenses incurred in review of this filing commencing from the filing date? Mid-American.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner. This is Amanda Hush with MidAmerican. I'm the Director of Regulatory Policy and REITs. MidAmerican does not oppose the initial fee proposed by staff.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you. This is Kristen Edwards for staff, and I'd like to be on record as saying I support Commissioner Hansen's request. And we also...
Wasn't that in the last motion?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And we also request a statutory filing fee.
Thank you. Any questions from the commission? Seeing none, is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, in EL 19-008, I move that the commission assess a filing fee in the amount of up to $50,000 to account for the actual expenses incurred in reviewing of this filing commencing from the filing date.
Discussion on the motion. Hearing none. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Chairman Hansen.
Aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carried. Brings us to grain. Grain Warehouse 19-001. Before I get into that, let me check. Bart Banks, have you joined us?
I have.
Excellent. Thank you. Grain Warehouse 19-001 in the matter of Greenleaf Commodities LLC failure to timely respond pursuant to SDCL 49-45-26. And the question that we're addressing today, shall the commission issue an order to show cause? And we will go first to staff.
Thank you. This is Kristen Edwards for staff. In 2013, in the wake of the Anderson seed issue, legislation was passed to enhance the PUC's ability to inspect for the protection of the public. Agriculture is central to our state, and when an elevator fails and producers lose money, it has a ripple effect. SDCL 49-45-26 is an example of legislation to protect against that. It is important to note that this statute applies to both licensed and unlicensed facilities, and there's a common sense reason for that. It's to prevent against exactly the situation we have here, where we have a facility that's unlicensed, but because they refuse to cooperate with our inspection, we can't determine if they should be licensed or if they're insolvent. Meanwhile, we're getting inquiries and complaints from or for non-payment. Greenleaf and its owner, Kent Anderson, have willfully failed to comply with state law and are putting producers and other elevators at risk. This is not new behavior. North Dakota issued a cease and desist order to prevent Mr. Anderson from acting as a grain buyer in 2006 and took similar or follow-up action in 2018. We also have reason to believe that there is a federal investigation currently underway. For that reason, every day that this business remains in violation, sellers are at greater risk. We have recently received contacts concerning the sale of assets, and this is very concerning to staff, as selling assets could mean that equity is declining, or it could mean nothing, but we don't know because we cannot look at their books. Mr. Chambliss and other inspectors have been out to Rapid City at least twice in an attempt to conduct a lawful investigation of this facility, but were unsuccessful in that attempt. Mr. Chambliss has also been in contact this week with Mr. Anderson, but was still unable to receive requested information. We also have other interested parties on the line, and we stand by for questions.
Thank you. We'll go to Mr. Banks, and I'm certain we'll come back around to questions. So, Bart, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We would support support the request for an order to show cause here. And although we're not a producer, we're a commercial seller of grain, and we have had the unfortunate opportunity to sell to Greenleaf. As in a lot of cases, the best evidence when you're investigating whether someone, an enactment applies to an entity or somebody, a lot of times the best evidence is held by a person, and I think that's exactly what an order to show cause is used for, and we would support that in this case, because like staff, we have attempted to get information, to get contact with Greenleaf and Mr. Anderson, and they have flat avoided us, and they're pretty good at it. I think that an order to show cause would be the best way to further investigate this to see whether the PUC can do anything to protect the public from these guys.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Just been notified that we have Conrad Crockford from the North Dakota Public Service Commission on the line. Conrad, would you like to add anything this morning?
Yes, I appreciate that, Chris, Commissioner Nelson. So our action with Ken Anderson started back in 2006, as identified by your staff. We had issues resurface with Mr. Anderson here in the summer of 2018. He had purchased from a couple of our commercial entities here in North Dakota. I can echo the statements that have been said so far about that he is a tough man to get a hold of. We had issues getting in touch with him as well regarding his purchasing activity in North Dakota and the fact that we still had a valid cease and desist out against him. Since that time, we have found that he's purchased from additional companies in the state, although they don't owe him, he doesn't owe them any money. They require to prepay up front. But because of that action, we have taken the liberty to forward our information, the violations of Mr. Anderson, onto our state's attorney's office for the county, given that we've got him violating a cease and desist issued by the commission. In addition, it's a Class B misdemeanor for purchasing grain in the state of North Dakota without the required license and bond. So that is where we stand with the actions of Mr. Anderson, and I'll stand for any questions from the commission as well.
Thank you. Appreciate your weighing in on that. We will go to questions from the commission. Commissioner Hansen.
I have none, thank you.
Commissioner Feagin.
The only comment or question maybe for staff is, you know, I'm going to be supporting this motion, but if there's a need for an ad hoc meeting between our next commission meeting, because we have to move more quickly, I'm certainly very supportive of that.
I've got just a couple of questions. Can you give me an understanding of what kind of operation this guy runs? Does he have physical facilities or what, Mr. Chambliss?
Cody Chambliss for staff. Mr. Anderson runs a processing facility, more or less. He takes canola, flax, and sunflowers and makes oil out of it and sells meal and oil to the feed industry. He has an actual facility in Rapid City, although I heard, I hear a lot of rumors lately, but through the grapevine I heard he's potentially in the process of moving his facility again, and this would be the fourth time in 2 years that he's moved a facility, which brings some concern. We have record of grain being purchased from producers and from elevators. There's a substantial amount owed. I did a rough calculation of what I have found, and approximately 47% of all grain he's purchased he has never paid for. So that's a pretty alarming number. I'll echo what everybody else said. He's very, very hard to get a hold of. He did contact us on Wednesday, provided a little bit of information, and then also asked me to which other individuals that we knew he had purchased from, because he didn't have record of it. So I know he has a program that has records on it, but I don't know what all's there. I will note, too, that there's seven different entities that he's a registered agent of in South Dakota. We have proof of him buying under multiple business names. And there's also his wife and a sister-in-law that also have registered businesses in South Dakota and Florida. And from what I can tell, they are all identical.
Thank you. So if we grant this motion, can you help me just understand a little bit how this is going to play out and what the timeline might be?
Thank you. This is Kristen Edwards for staff. If the motion was granted, an order to show cause would be issued pursuant to 2010-01-45, at which point that order to show cause would be served and noticed upon Mr. Anderson. If I had to guess, I would assume you will end up publishing that notice in the newspaper because nobody's been able to find him.
Okay, so what's going to be the timeline in that order then? What is the deadline for response?
The order shall be served at least 10 days before the hearing unless otherwise ordered pursuant to that rule.
So does the order contain a date for a hearing?
Yes.
And what is that date?
It would be at least 10 days from service unless otherwise ordered, so the commission could order a sooner date. And
I guess I'm just kind of pushing you. So assuming we pass this today, I'm assuming you're going to issue this order this afternoon, and so it's going to contain a hearing date, correct? And what is that date?
The hearing date, I would put at the next commission meeting, unless the commission would like to have an ad hoc and do it sooner.
What's your recommendation? I mean, I'm with Commissioner Feagin. If time is of the essence, but if we got to have 10 days, I haven't looked at the calendar. I don't know when the next commission meeting, I think it's the 18th maybe. Or the 19th. I guess I'm looking for your recommendation as to whether or not we need to deal with that now.
This is Amanda Reese for staff, and I would just weigh in. This is a situation where we're anticipating being required to publish that notice, so it might be a little bit of extra time to get that notice published and to try to serve it on the individual. So I'm not sure if rushing this would be the best idea at this time, just to make sure he has adequate notice of the hearing. However, we do have an email address, and we have spoken to him. So perhaps the next commission meeting, the 19th of March.
Okay. Well, that answers my questions for now, and I would just echo what Commissioner Feagin said. If we need to do something on an ad hoc basis, you know, we'll do it. And if not, fine. Whatever you all think is best. The last question I've got for Mr. Banks. Given what we've heard here today and your understanding of kind of the lay of the land, is there a general understanding in the industry that folks ought not do business with this gentleman any longer? Or where do things kind of stand in that regard?
Well, I think the answer to that is that there is certainly both people that are aware of his activities. There's an understanding they're not to him, but it's not a good idea to do business with him. But problem is not a lot of the producers and other people in the industry know about him. I mean, it's just not widely publicized. This stuff doesn't get out unless, of course, you guys get a hold of it and act on it. So I've done some research on this guy. I mean, he's got a pretty good track record stemming North Dakota and multiple states ending up here. But I think this is more of a deal where he'll go to an area and then basically exhaust his opportunities to do what he wants to do, and then he moves to another area. That's why you hear from staff that he keeps moving his facility, which is certainly not a cheap thing to do. I mean, there's something motivating him to continually move. So the short answer to your question is that, at least with us, I mean, I've got all of my locations, and none of us are going to do business with him, obviously, but he's shifty.
Thank you. any further questions from commissioners? Hearing none. Oh, yes.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer from the commission. For staff, I'm trying to figure out on the order to show cause, what are we asking for so we can figure out, because we have to give appropriate notice as to the remedy. Is the question, why don't you have a license? Is the question, what's your reason for failure to respond to us? Is your question, we want to hear about the complaints on the failure to timely file? Is your question, I don't know what it is you exactly want us to notice.
Thank you. This is Kristen Edwards for staff. And we kept the issue very narrow because there's so little that we can prove, not having gotten any of the records. What we can show, I believe, is that he did not comply with the state requirement to respond within 5 days. And that is a misdemeanor. So the remedy we would like is for the commission to ultimately issue an order that he has not complied with that and to forward it to the circuit court, or to the, rather, to the state's attorney and attorney general's office for prosecution as a misdemeanor. Until we look at his facilities, I just don't know what bigger hammer we have. Potentially seeking an injunction, that would be really great, but I just don't know that the commission has the authority to pursue an injunction. That would have to go through the circuit court, and the state's attorney could do that.
In what county are you looking at?
Pennington.
Solely Pennington?
He's listed as Spearfish, which I believe is Lawrence County, but the facility that we have knowledge of is in Pennington County.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions from the commission? Is there a motion?
Chairman, in GW 19-001, I move that the commission issue an order to show cause.
Discussion on the motion.
Mr. Chair, I'm just amazed at everything we've read and heard about this situation and how it's been ongoing. As Edwards and certainly Cody presented an incredible amount of story and information on this, and I just am so surprised that something like this can continue and continue, and hopefully we can put a stop to it and get the information that's along the line of what Ms. Edwards has explained, that get this to state's attorney and attorney general so that if this activity that we've been told is actually true. I have no doubt in the report from the staff that they're accurate, and they always have been. And when we hear something of this nature, we want to put a stop to it as soon as we possibly can. So I'm in very strong support of Commissioner Fegan's suggestion that we move as quickly as possible on this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Additional comments? I guess I would simply say I agree with Commissioner Hansen fully. Would simply say that the ownership and management of Greenleaf Commodities certainly had an opportunity to appear here today to rebut or discuss this matter, and they've not chosen to participate by phone or in person. Additional discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Chairman Hansen.
Aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carried. Brings us to our last issue, Natural Gas 19-002, in the matter of the filing by Montana Dakota Utilities for approval of its revised conservation tracking adjustment. And the question, shall the commission grant Montana Dakota Utilities' request for approval of the revised conservation tracking adjustment of $0.022 per decatherm and the associated conservation program tracking mechanism rate 90 tariff sheet with an effective date of March 1st, that'd be today, on less than 30 days' notice? And we'll go to MDU.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Travis Jacobson with Montana Dakota. And today I have with me Larry Oswald, our Director of Business Development and Energy Services, Tammy Averly and Nathan Benson from our regulatory group, as well as Jeremy Fisher, Manager of Energy Services, I believe has called in as well. So the filing you have before you today is a request to adjust Montana Dakota's conservation tracking adjustment to reflect the true-up of actual expenditures through December 2018 and projected 2019 expenditures as approved by the Commission for the 2018 to 2020 portfolio in docket number NG17-16. The CTA proposed in the January 31, 2019 filing reflects a slight decrease from the currently effective CTA rate. Montana Dakota requests to implement a CTA rate for the period March 1, 2019 through February 28, 2020 of $0.22 per DK or a decrease of $0.007 from the current rate, which equates to an annual decrease of 49 cents for a residential customer using 70 decatherms annually. Participation in the gas conservation portfolio in the last year remains relatively consistent with prior years, with 645 total customers participating. The portfolio provided decatherm savings of 115,850 decatherms over the projected life of the installed equipment at a total cost of $152,215. 80.7% of the budgeted decatherm savings were obtained at 75.8% of the authorized budget cost. The amount to be recovered includes the budget of $208,600 approved for 2019. Montana Dakota analyzed the cost effectiveness of its 2018 program results using projected 2019 residential gas costs of $6.15, and the total portfolio is cost effective, along with each individual program. The rebates provided were cost-effective and provide benefits to all customers. Montana Dakota requests approval of the CTA rates effective with service rendered March 1, 2019. Thank you for the opportunity to present, and our group is available for questions if you have them.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. This is Lorena Reichert of staff. Staff has reviewed the filing, and the company has responded to all of staff's data requests. We would recommend that the Commission grant MDU's request for approval of the revised conservation tracking adjustment of $0.22 per decatherm and the associated conservation program tracking mechanism tariff sheet with an effective date of March 1st, 2019, on less than 30 days' notice.
Thank you. Questions from the Commission? Hearing no questions, is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, in NG19-002, I move that the Commission grant MDU's request for approval of the revised conservation tracking adjustment of 0.022 per decatherm, and that the associated conservation program tracking mechanism rate 90 tariff sheet with an effective date of March 1st, 2019, on less than 30 days' notice.
Discussion on the motion.
You know, I certainly appreciate MDU's filing on this. We've always appreciated your conservation program and your energy efficiency. And as you know, we've used your model, especially in the furnace rebate, and suggested that to other IOUs, such as MidAmerican, that have now followed your model on that. It appears to me that your furnace program is extremely strong. You're actually under budget. And on percentage-wise, you're over your forecasted savings. We'll always continue to look at your audit. And I know we kind of are doing that as a pilot, and you're working with Black Hills Energy when you can. The audits are kind of expensive, so I'll continue to look at that and see where we go on the future.
Additional discussion. I guess I'd simply add it. I get the feeling when I read through this, we've kind of arrived at a pretty finely tuned program that just appears to flat be working well. You're staying within the budget, bringing these reductions when appropriate, and I consider all of that very good. Additional discussion. Hearing none. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Chairman Hansen.
Aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. That brings us to an opportunity for public comment, and there is absolutely no public in the room to comment. So, unless Mr. Rezac wants to add anything, and he's shaking his head no, we will go to announcements, and the week of March 18th is going to be PUC Road Trip Week. The 18th, we're going to be in Rapid City for a public input hearing on an application by Black Hills Power for a transmission line. We will be back here Tuesday afternoon, the 19th, for our next regularly scheduled meeting, except it will be 1 p.m. Tuesday afternoon. Then on Wednesday of that week, we're going to go to Highmore for a public input meeting. See, I'm already messed up. I'm going to be in the wrong place. On that later that afternoon, we're going to go to Highmore for a public input meeting on the Triple H Wind Project. That's going to be Tuesday the 19th. And then Wednesday the 20th, we're going to go to Waverly for a public input meeting on the Crown Ridged Wind Project application. Anything else for the good of the order? Is there a motion?
Move to adjourn.
All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Chairman Hansen.
Aye.
And Nelson votes aye. We are adjourned.